Her body was discovered in a nearby wooded area.
She was stabbed 19 times and left for dead,
where two adults have been shot to death.
143 people have been murdered. Hundreds more have been shot.
She had been stabbed to death.
It was the bloodiest thing I think I've ever been to.
Welcome back to another episode of Dark and Deadly. This is going to be kind of a different episode because I have a different co-host today because Gina is on her deathbed, but she's not really, but she's sick. So she is not going to be here today. I have with me my best friend, Michaela. Say hi.
Hi.
We've had some like audio difficulties. So if there's an issue throughout that, just know that we're sorry and we don't know how to fix it because we already spent an hour trying to fix it. So
longest hour of my life.
Really though. I want to apologize because we were supposed to do a Killer Kids episode for this episode. But like I said, Gina was sick. So that will be next week. I'm going to be covering a super confusing and frustrating case. And this is the case of Jared Otadero. And you've never heard of this, right?
No.
Okay. So this takes place in the Comanche Peak Wilderness in Colorado. And Jared was only 3 years old at the time of his disappearance. His dad, Alan, and his uncle actually bought a resort in this area of Colorado. And on the specific weekend, which was October 2nd, 1999, they were going to begin winterizing the resort. So I'm not exactly sure what all that entails, but at this time, there was a Christian's singles group that was staying there. And are you yawning already?
I'm sorry. It's like 10 o'clock here. I couldn't help
that
one.
I'm sorry. I was like, I don't know if I should pause because she looks like she's going to sneeze. Oh.
I really wasn't sure what was coming out with that one. If it was yawn or sneeze or both. So I just decided to pull the microphone away a little bit.
Okay. So
anyways,
there was a Christian single group that was staying there, and they had actually previously stayed there over the summer and were pretty familiar with the Otadero family. So they offered to help them winterize the resort in exchange for staying there, which sounds like a good little trade-off. Jared had an older sister and her name was Jocelyn, and she was six at the time. So I imagine this as like both my kids. I have an almost three-year-old and a six-year-old, so pretty close in age, right? Jocelyn really adored one of the girls in the singles group, and her name was Janet. So the group decides that they want to go and visit a fish hatchery about a mile and a half away from the resort. And when Jocelyn overhears this, being a six-year-old, she expresses that she wants to go along and tag along with Janet. And Janet agrees to watch Jocelyn, but as siblings go, as soon as Jared hears that Jocelyn gets to go, he begs his father to let him go too. And Alan is hesitant at first. He trusts the group, but is obviously aware that like three-year-olds can be tough to keep track of and wrangle, for lack of a better word. Like, we know that that age be wild and be crazy.
Oh yeah. Way too crazy.
So
they
beat
to their own drum.
Yeah. And after probably some crying and begging on Jared's part, Alan agrees to let him go along, which is probably just a defeated, yeah, whatever, okay, at this point. So the group promises that they're going to keep a good eye on both kids and head off down the road. And this would be the last time that Alan sees his son. The group consisted of 11 adults and then the two kids, Jared and Jocelyn. They go to this fish hatchery only to see that it is indeed very boring. And not as exciting as it sounded, apparently, which we're from Idaho. We know exactly what that's like. And it's literally extremely boring.
Not gonna lie, I kind of like fish hatcheries.
Okay. Wow. Really
cute
boring to me.
Crickets chirping here. I just like there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on.
So they decided to go to a trail and go on a hike. And you're familiar with like the McCall area. This is kind of what the territory is like up there. So just imagine that as you're listening to this. So they pack up the kids in the car and they head about 16 miles away from the resort to a trail called Big South Trail, which is about 7 miles long. And it's about a 20-minute drive away from the resort. Nobody called to tell Alan of this change. A few hours pass by, and three employees of Alan's burst through the door and inform him that something had happened to Jared. Obviously, as a father, he starts to panic because he still thinks that they're a mile down the road at the fish hatchery. He's going through all the scenarios of what if he fell in or broke an arm or something along those lines. But then they tell him, Jared's okay. We just can't find him. How do you know he's okay if you can't find him?
I was going to say to lead light. He's okay, don't worry, but we can't find him. How does that make any sense?
Right.
As a parent, how would that solve any fears or, you know, even calm them?
I know, I'd be like, come again? You can't find him, but you know he's okay? That doesn't make any sense. So many people have found this statement strange because, like we just said, if you can't find him, how do you know he's okay? Butch, who's the manager, asks Alan if he wants him to call search and rescue after he tells him where the kids really are. So he explains they left the fish hatchery. They went up to this trail and that's where they're at now. Do you want us to call search and rescue? Alan, even though he's obviously panicking, tells him no at this point, that he would go to the head trail himself and call for him and see if he can come back. And Alan was thinking maybe he's just playing hide and seek or something like that. And he hoped once he got there and started calling his name that he would come out from wherever he was. Alan makes the drive to the trail and literally runs for a mile straight, just calling out for Jared, but Jared never comes out. Now, at this point, he's thinking he's made a huge mistake by not having Butch call search and rescue. But to his surprise, when he gets back to the parking area, search and rescue was starting to pile in because Butch.
Okay, I'm confused. Him. So they said that they knew where the kids were. They were on this trail, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they said that Jared was the only one missing, yet his sister is with him?
No.
Okay.
She's with the group, which I'll get in to kind of explain how Jared went off on his own.
Okay.
So when he gets back to the parking area, search and rescue's there, and he starts looking for Jocelyn because nobody mentioned where Jocelyn was. And he wanted to make sure she was safe. And he spots her in a car with Janet. So Janet claims she took Jocelyn back to the resort to see if somebody had drove Jared back there. Which to me sounds like a lot of time that Jared's been missing and he's just now finding out about this, you know?
Yeah.
If it's a 20-minute drive there, I don't know. That just seems weird. So the authorities in search and rescue are starting to pile in, and I'm sorry, but there were like 11 adults there watching two kids. Why was nobody assigned to just like look out for it? He's a toddler.
Yeah.
Especially when they're all saying they're going to watch out for him and nobody out of 11 people kept an eye on him.
I'm sorry. Hold his hand.
Yeah.
Like hold on to his shirt, something, have some sort of attachment.
Yeah. So here is what the group said happened. Basically, when they were on the trail, the group ended up splitting into two different smaller groups. One group had faster walkers in it, and then the other one was slower walkers. And the kids started off in the slow group, but at some point, Jared wanted to join the fast group. So he starts walking faster and ends up passing the fast group altogether also. So he was in the slow group, wanted to go up to the fast group, ended up passing the fast group. And the strangest part is he's not alone at this time. Okay. He's not with Jocelyn. He's not one of the people from the group. At some point, two fishermen who had started on the trail and eventually caught up with the group and passed by them, Jared was with them. And he was a curious 3-year-old. So he starts chatting it up with these two fishermen and walking with them. And nobody in the group stops him or goes with him. They just let him go off with these two fishermen.
Makes no sense.
And this would be the last time that the group sees Jared also. Eventually, the fishermen get up to a fork in the trail. And they need to head one way to go to their fishing area. But Jared heads the other way. Now, the fishermen look behind them and see that the group is only about 50 feet away from the boy at this point. So they just let him go off and let him go on his merry way, leaving a baby alone in the wilderness. I mean, yeah. I know they're only 50 feet away, but still.
My twins are 2.5 years old and they are, in my mind, still babies. I cannot imagine just letting them walk off, especially with strangers, for one, ahead of me. And yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. And I know if I was in the wilderness and if I saw somebody's kid out there, I wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, you go. No. I'd be like, I mean, I would simply just wait there with the child. I'd be like, you need to stay here until like your parents come or something, so that I knew that he was okay. But these two had no responsibility to this child anyway. I don't know. They thought that they were doing the right thing, I guess, but I don't know. I blame the group though, too. They should have been more responsible.
No. See, and that's what I think I blame the most. And too, like, yeah, the fishermen, but again, the fishermen were walking. You're like, well, if the group's not worried, they must be used to this. He's with the group. They probably thought that a parent was within that group and had eyes on him, knew that he was walking and talking with them. So in a way, I really don't blame the fishermen. It's the group for allowing him to get so far ahead to walk with the fishermen to begin with.
Right.
And not doing anything, being only 50 feet away, they could see that he was branching off. Where was the adult in the fast group not running up? Like, who was having eyes that didn't decide that, oh, I should run up and grab this toddler, this infant, this baby, because that's what he is.
Exactly. And the saddest part about this is that Alan's family was never even informed by the authorities about these two extra people, the two fishermen. They literally found out while listening to the radio.
Yeah, I would be livid.
Yeah. So back to the time when Jared goes missing, the authorities and search and rescue come in and canvass the entire 7-mile long trail looking for Jared. And at nightfall, they call off the search for the evening because they thought maybe he got tired and decided to go to sleep. So they'd pick back up in the morning, around the time that Jared usually woke up in the morning.
No.
Yeah. This is literally the wilderness where mountain lions and bears roam.
Well, and I'm sorry, but anybody that knows toddlers, okay, he goes to sleep around this time and he wakes up around this time. Okay, in a normal setting.
Exactly.
But if my kids are not home, they're not going down at bedtime.
No.
They have a strict bedtime. It's 7:30. But if we're not home, they don't have their crib setting, then it's like, it's a free for all. They're awake until they have that feeling of, oh, this is bedtime. This is routine. So what's to say that he didn't keep going? That's losing so much time, search time, evidence time, everything.
Right. And I mean,
like you said, being alone out there with animals, predators, everything.
Yeah. I understand not being able to like really utilize resources at night, like helicopters and whatnot, but you bet your ass I would have people in tents at every single campsite along that trail.
Yeah.
Hoping to hear or come across Jared that night, like taking turns canvassing the trail. I mean, there's ways to do things at night.
There's flashlights and there's feet. Like people can be out there walking. You get a good enough group of people and you spread out and you all kind of stay in a certain distance of each other with all your flashlights. You can have that lit up.
Plus, when you have multiple people up and down that trail, that's going to deter large animals from coming in and possibly hurting Jared.
The sound, like, okay, if you think of a hunter needs to spray themselves down with a scent killer, be completely silent, not move. Like, they barely breathe. They watch their breathing to keep the animals from hearing because they're going to run off. Now, wouldn't anything else do the same if you hear a bunch of people tromping through yelling for a little boy?
Yep, exactly. So they come back the next morning and start searching again, but obviously they come up empty handed because they just lost a whole bunch of time. And they kept expanding their search. And they brought in dive teams to search the rivers and like the bodies of water that were near the trail. They brought in cadaver dogs and they actually got a hit on something. So remember that, but we'll come back to it in a minute.
Okay.
It doesn't take long before tension starts to arise between the authorities and the Otodaro family. So their command center was actually set up at the resort. the authorities was. And shortly after investigation started, they started refusing help from the family. They wouldn't let them help search the trail or anything. Alan even had family from California come in to help and lend their support, and they wouldn't let them do it. One day, the family decides to go to the trail to help authorities in any way that they can with the search. And Alan stayed behind back at command center. So as he's at command center, there's obviously like radios, phones, walkie-talkies all over the place that officers would use to relay messages back and forth. And Alan is standing nearby when he hears come through one of the radios, "We're going to have to arrest the Atadero family if they don't stop causing problems." Yeah.
You're going to arrest the family of the missing toddler that is freaking out and panicking. That makes a lot of sense, because the problems that they're causing is they're trying to find their son.
Yeah. And Alan is like rightfully confused, wondering what on earth his family did to like warrant such a response, right? He's like, what the heck are they doing over there? So he jumps in his car and he heads to the trail to sort out whatever the issue is. When he gets there, he's told that they only offered their help and that the authorities' reaction to them, and that was the reaction that the authorities had when they offered their help. They literally threatened them for no reason.
Yeah, most search and rescues end up involving tons of volunteers plus family.
Right. And the family fights back with authorities, and they finally agree to let them help search the trail, but only with a police escort. Why would they be so abrupt to threaten arresting an entire family for trying to search for a missing child?
Yeah. Like,
the family was rightfully upset. And eventually a helicopter was called in to do a search because they had done pretty much everything that they could on foot. This is how left in the dark the family was. They started receiving calls from people asking if Jared had been found. So people from around the area are calling Alan's family, like, did you find Jared? And Alan was super confused, asking why they thought this, because multiple people had started calling. And each of these people explained that they saw the helicopter at the top of the mountain. And then shortly after, ambulances were rushing to the scene. So Alan rushes to a nearby resort to see if they knew anything. And remember, his resort is literally the command center. Okay. Mm-hmm. He drives to another resort. And this is how bad the communication is with the authorities. Alan gets there and learns they didn't find Jared, but the helicopter had crashed.
Oh my goodness.
And nobody was injured, thank goodness. But it's like, why are other people learning this information before the Atadero family?
Yeah.
They should be the first call, like, hey, we haven't found Jared, but our helicopter just crashed. Just wanted to give you a little update. Like, it literally takes 5 seconds.
Seriously.
While the search was happening, a trained tracker from the military came in, and he was incredibly skilled. So he came in to try and help the investigation. And this man had no idea who Alan was. He was just brought in to help find Jared. So he's staying at Alan's resort, and he's grabbing food to eat. He takes it up to the cashier, who at the time was Alan. And he starts explaining that he's so tired from hiking up and down the mountains trying to find this missing boy, not knowing at all who he's talking to. And Alan introduces himself, and the man went pale. And he said, I have to talk to you. It's very important. Please come sit down. I have to show you something. So he sits down, and he starts drawing out a map for Alan. And then he draws an X and explains to Alan that he has tracked Jared over and over again to this exact spot on the map. He believed that Jared was in that area, but there was no way for him to get to this area. And he asked the authorities to help him get to it, and nobody would help. He asked Alan to get involved and tell a search and rescue team to look in the area. And at first, he didn't think they would do it after all the hell he's been through with the investigation and their unwillingness to like truly help the family. But to his surprise, they tell him they'll look into it and try and figure out a way to do it. So they told him they would call him tomorrow, and then tomorrow comes and he gets a call. Okay. But instead of keeping their word, they tell him, well, the helicopter went over that area and didn't see anything, so it's been considered searched. They refuse to go search the area again. And this map does come up later. So also remember that. So we're going to backtrack again to the day that Jared went missing. And a park ranger actually believes that he saw Jared on the trail with an older man. Okay. Not the two fishermen, an older man. And this park ranger was doing like a tour, I guess, with a group of people at the time. And he explains that Jared tried to get away from this man and run toward the park ranger. And the park ranger dismissed it because he thought that the man was like who he was supposed to be with, and thinking that he was just like throwing a tantrum because the man didn't seem suspicious or out of place at all. And sometimes 3-year-olds,
Yeah.
So he didn't think anything of it until he saw the picture of Jared on the news that night. And guess what the authorities did?
Nothing.
Yeah. They tried to search for the man, but they didn't interview the park ranger for any additional information. This entire investigation was like botched from beginning to end. And to make matters worse, the police lied about this, telling that the media that they had talked to the ranger and interviewed him. But the ranger has come forward multiple times saying that this isn't true. And to this day, he's never been asked what he saw out there.
How do you search for a person when you never talked to the only person that saw him to know what you're searching for?
Exactly. So this part's going to make you completely outraged, like it did me. The sheriff, the leader of this stupid investigation, agrees to do an interview about the theory of a man taking Jared. And I think it was with a journalist trying to cover the story. When he finishes the interview, after he thinks the cameras are off, he says, "Are you as tired of the story as I am?" And then he chuckled. This was only three weeks after he went missing.
That's a baby.
Yeah. People were livid. And at this point, the Otadero family is feeling super discouraged, heartbroken, frustrated. Like, they felt like nobody was in their corner and helping them to their full ability. And it just gets worse. Like, that's not even the tip of the iceberg. Multiple cadaver dog teams, the National Guard, multiple search and rescue teams call Allen, offering their help and assistance. And unfortunately, sheriffs have to approve outside resources coming in. And they turned away every single organization trying to come in because they couldn't afford to pay for it, is what they said. And Allen went and returned those phone calls and let them know that they weren't able to come because of finances. And all of them were like, "What do you mean? We don't ask for money to come do those sorts of things. We send in volunteers, and the sheriff's department knows this."
That is so shady.
Yeah. From the get-go, this investigation was set up for failure. The item they took for the dogs to smell to pick up a scent were a pair of shorts. Okay. So the dogs that they sent out that first day were a pair of shorts.
Okay.
They were not Jared's shorts. They were his dad's shorts.
Oh my Lord.
That's not something that you mess up on accident. You don't go into a house
and grab a 3-year-old compared to an adult size shorts.
Yeah. And for weeks, that's what they had been searching with, that scent.
Oh my.
Finally, the Arapaho search and rescue team that was local to the area, they came forward to volunteer their efforts, and authorities actually agreed to this one. But the night before they were supposed to come out for the search, they get a call from the sheriff's department, and they say, "If you show up tomorrow morning to search, you will all be arrested." No other explanation.
What in the world? How can they choose to turn away? I mean, I guess technically if they're considering the holding crime scene, they can lock people out from it. But still, when it's that much coverage, that much area, how can you actually turn people away or arrest them?
Especially people who are local to that area and know that area. Like,
yeah,
that's such an important key to helping solve these kind of things.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. And they did end up showing up, actually, and they came in their civilian clothes. Because they were like, "Fuck you, we're coming anyway." And they were all together, and they were able to get through using this disguise as civilians. And a U.S. congressman was actually in the search party, and he approached Allen, and he told them that he received a phone call on his work number from the authorities that said if he knew what was good for him, he would not show up to search. I mean, what is happening? Why are people threatening
to not search? They're clearly covering or hiding something.
Right. That's what I think. The Otodaro family came up with the conclusion that the authorities wanted the credit for finding Jared. And considering they still hadn't found him, if someone else came in and found him, then their department would look really bad. But how could they look any worse than they already are at this point?
Yeah.
And they didn't dare admit that they messed up on multiple fronts when it came to the search. And I mean, this is what the family believed. I think there was something else, but I don't know. Authorities believed that he fell into one of the smaller rivers, which led to larger bodies of water in the area. And they said that because it is so cold there in that area all the time, they didn't think his body would resurface for 4 years. Fast forward 4 years after Jared goes missing, Wednesday, June 4th, 2003, hikers were climbing above the trail, and it's 500 vertical feet up, a half a mile from Jared was last seen. Okay. They found scattered kids' clothing on a cliff. And when authorities showed up, it was positively identified as the clothing that Jared was wearing when he went missing. There was no way for a three-year-old to get to this area unassisted. And the pants were inside out. And the craziest thing of all, they didn't look like they had been worn down or like they had been sitting out in the elements for 4 years. They looked exactly like he just walked out of the house that day.
Like they were there.
Yeah. There was also no evidence of a wild animal getting a hold of Jared, because that was one of the theories that people came up with. Another weird thing is the shoes were also in really good condition. The shoelaces were still white. His dad even said they looked exactly like they did the day he went missing also. And I mean, there's just no way for them to have been out there in the weather and still be in the condition that they were found in.
Yeah, for 4 years. My kid's stuff doesn't even look like the same after being outside for one day.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
4 years and you're saying the shoelaces are white? Give my kids a day. Shoelaces definitely are not white.
And I mean, Colorado gets a lot of snow. You think all those clothes are going to be in the same position 4 years later after snow melts and stuff? There's no way. Wind
blowing and animals carrying things from scenting something, picking them up. No.
Right. And they even said that like one of his pant legs, there was pieces missing off of it. Like a bird had came and like undid the material to like make a nest or something like that. So you can't tell me that a bird would just like sit there and do that in that same spot. It's going to be moved around a little bit.
Yeah.
There was also no blood found on the clothes either. So there's no way that there was an attack by an animal, because if a mountain lion got him, obviously there's going to be some sort of sign.
Yeah. Claw marks, shredded clothes, blood, teeth marks, like everything all just embedded in it.
Yeah. And people were like, if it was a wild animal, why has there been no remains found? Like no bones, no teeth, nothing was found in the area. Okay. People were saying this. Authorities say they searched the area more thoroughly to see if they could find anything, and they came up empty. A week after his clothes were found, part of a cranium and a tooth were found almost in the exact same area.
How did they miss it then a week prior?
Exactly. Now, I'm not aware of the weather conditions at this time. It's June, but it's in a mountainy area of Colorado, and they get a lot of snow and rain at this time. And at the time it was searched, it could have been covered by snow or dirt, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a likely scenario, because the tooth was sitting on a pile of pine needles.
Yeah, like it would have been buried underneath the pine needles had it been there from the winter and the fall prior. Well, the four falls prior.
Yeah. I mean, there's absolutely no way it'd be sitting there after years of animals and weather.
Yeah.
No. So you remember the map I mentioned earlier?
Mm-hmm.
The X on the map was only 35 feet away from all this, where all the evidence was found. So that tracker had exactly marked within 35 feet of where he believed Jared to be. which is crazy.
Yeah.
Especially because they said that they flew a helicopter over there and didn't see anything. So the skull and the tooth were sent off for analysis, and they concluded with an 86% chance that they belonged to Jared, which is pretty good, like pretty likely odds.
Mm-hmm.
But because of all the weird stuff that has happened with the sheriff's department in the past, Alan decided to send the remains to another doctor in Ohio to just get like a second opinion to confirm whether or not they truly belonged to his son before he like began the grieving process and like putting his son to rest and all that.
Yeah.
According to the doctor, he said the results were pretty inconclusive, but not only that, the tooth had more than one person's DNA on it. The tooth was contaminated somewhere along the line. Whether or not it was from authorities when they first gathered evidence, it was improperly handled when it was being examined the first time, or someone had placed the tooth there for someone to find.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yep. And the tooth had been destroyed during the testing, so they weren't able to test it any further for results. 2 years after this, though, the cranium was confirmed as belonging to Jared. So we're not finished. A woman in the medical field actually got in contact with Alan via email and told him that she knew exactly where the scratches that were on top of the cranium came from. Because when they got the cranium, there were like some scratches on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
She said that the only way this could have happened is if it was dragged along the bottom of a creek bed, like the rocks.
Gotcha.
Which supported what authorities told Alan had likely happened, where he had fallen in one of the rivers or whatnot. And Alan questioned, though, as to why his clothes and these partial remains would end up on the, like a cliffside, if this is what actually happened to him. If his body ended up going from a river to a larger body of water, why is everything showing up on this cliff?
And yeah.
And the lady responded with, well, there could have been a flash flood that left them there after the water receded. And then Alan responded with that, what flash flood do you know of that rises 500 vertical feet without it being an absolutely like natural disaster in that area? And why would the items be in the exact same spot as each other?
Yeah, they wouldn't be. They would have all went different places way before this flash flood, over the 4 years. Why would they be in that good of condition from being in the water?
Right. And after he asked her that, the woman stopped replying.
Wow.
Yeah. So it seems like there's a very specific agenda that's being pushed here. Strange hairs were actually found in the collar of the sweatshirt. Now remember, there was not a single drop of blood on his clothes. And Alan looked at all the results from all of the tests ran for the items that were found, except for one. And that was the results for the strange hairs being found. The sheriff told him that all he needed to know was that it didn't belong to a mountain lion, but they didn't know what animal it belonged to. They wouldn't let him see the actual results of this. Which, it didn't belong to a mountain lion, but they didn't know what animal it belonged to. Which is, I mean, that's a very strange thing to say.
Why would you point out the one animal that you know it didn't? Like, that just makes no sense. Yet you don't know what it belongs to. Also, that's his child, his results. Why would they withhold that from him?
Right. Like, they're obviously keeping information from the family. And if you're willing to release every single result except for one, that you're hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
Get this. The authorities have a theory that Jared was ahead of the group when he got swooped up by a mountain lion. But the hairs don't belong to a mountain lion.
They can't even keep their lies to different people straight.
I know. And so they're saying that the mountain lion took him up the cliff before hearing the group coming up behind them, and the mountain lion ran off, leaving Jared behind. So here's my problem with this theory. Number one, his clothes were in perfect condition. There weren't any drag marks. There wasn't any blood. His shoes weren't dirty. His shoes were also not tied. There was no way that a mountain lion could drag him up the side of the mountain without his shoes falling off. Like, his shoes were untied.
Well, and he was only 50 feet ahead of them.
Yeah.
You would have heard a little boy. I'm sorry. My kid runs and screams from a chicken when it decides to turn around and chase him.
Exactly.
You think that a mountain lion dragging him is not going to cause a child to scream out of fear for its parents?
Yeah. Like, You think he's just sitting there like, well, this put a damper on my day.
All right. I mean, whatever you want to do, big kitty cat. No.
No. The answer authorities have for this was, well, maybe he stripped off his clothing before he got taken by the mountain lion.
Hold on, mountain lion. Please wait. I would like to get undressed for this. So, you know, it's more freeing in the air. No.
I mean, three-year-olds do weird things sometimes, but
don't get me wrong. My kids strip. They strip all the time. But in the time of the 50 feet distance for him to take his clothes off right before a mountain lion took it. No, absolutely not. Does that make sense?
Like my almost three-year-old gets a shirt halfway up over his head and starts screaming and having a panic attack because he can't get it over his fat head.
Yeah, mine fumble around all the time. Not only that, you would have seen it walking up if he took his clothes off before the mountain lion took him. How does that right. theory make sense? Because when they traveled up the trail, they would have seen the clothes. My kids leave a trail of clothes. You know where they're going when they're stripping.
And it was on the top of a cliff. It wasn't even down on the trail.
So he climbed up on top of the cliff, took off his clothes, and then said, okay, mountain lion, go for it.
Right. And then just bring my remains back here with my clothes, please.
Yeah. Like if you're going to bring it all back right here, I want my clothes to be left here. Could you please take care of my clothes so they're unweathered for 4 years? This makes absolutely no sense.
No sense. None at all. So I watched a YouTube video of a guy named David Politis. I think it was. And he actually shows the exact area of where the clothes were found and the trail that they went on. And he and his cameraman had like a really tough time climbing to the top where the clothes were found. So there's essentially no way that Jared could have gone up there by himself. They had at some point like crawling on their hands and knees and were even sliding down at some points because it was just, it's steep, it's rocky. There's lots of pine needles, which makes the floor really hard to like, you know, get good footing on.
Yeah.
And like I said, they claimed that the helicopter flew over this area. So wouldn't they have seen something if he was there at the time? I could be wrong, but I think Jared was wearing like a red shirt. I could be wrong, but you can't see a red shirt. Come on.
You would notice something.
Could a mountain lion have taken him? Sure. But I don't know. With all this, it just doesn't add up for me. And like with all the other sketchy stuff with the authorities and the fact that they said that the results came back and it wasn't a mountain lion, but then turn around and say it was a mountain lion. Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird to me. So that's why this case, just like, I think about it at least a couple times a week because nobody knows what happened to him truly. And his family has been left without answers or closure for their son's death. And I truly think that the police were like covering something up. I don't know if they were trying to save someone that they knew, like back to when the ranger said he saw Jared with an older gentleman. It almost makes me think that that older gentleman had ties to the sheriff's department, a close friend or a relative, and that the sheriff helped him cover it up. And then they planted the clothes and the bones there years later.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty precise that they said we won't see anything for 4 years.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, boom.
Why is there no remains? And 1 week later, remains show up.
Yeah, that it's too off, it's too sketchy, and then too precise for when you do find it, especially considering the one place they find it in, the one place that they just really refuse to go check. They refuse to the one guy, and then they say, oh, we will. Oh, well, it was covered by this. Just conveniently that they really never covered this area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Other than someone covering up something, whether someone had ties, it was someone retired from the police department, a family member, something happened on that mountain trail.
Right. Even if it was like an accident and they are just like trying to cover up what happened to him. I don't know. There's a lot of corruption like in smaller communities in the sheriff's departments. I feel like when you know people, they try to cover stuff up, unfortunately. And I don't know if the sheriff, the sheriff said pretty horrible things after that interview. So we know for a fact that he lacked any empathy or care at all for this child.
Yeah, there was, I don't know. There's just too much. There's just too much against it. I feel that he was definitely hiding things. And as sheriff, he probably had many people that were, what's the word I want to use? Many people that were under him, willing to go along with whatever he said or agree or, you know, whatever. There was just, he was in a position and able to do it for whatever reason, whether it be accident, someone he knew, but something was covered up. Almost I 100% definitely. Believe that something was covered up. And yeah, he had no empathy for it.
Yeah, it sucks. So that was my case on Jared Ondadero. Thank you, Michaela, for being my co-host.
You're welcome.
And then you can follow us on our socials. All of them are going to be at Dark and Deadly Pod. And then you can send us a Gmail at darkanddeadlypod@gmail.com. So thank you again, Michaela, for being here.
Of course. I loved it.
And we hope everybody has a great week. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Ending it is the worst part.